I'm Ted Baker, and this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, episode 77, looking back at a 14-10 loss to Albany, first ever meeting between the programs, and another first ever. It'll be Hobart and newly crowned Division I team Lemoyne at noon this Saturday at the Boz, joined by head coach of the Statesman, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
All right, Ted.
Well, first takeaway from the 14-10 loss is, even in this higher scoring era, it's just hard to overcome when you get into that early hole 4-0.
Yeah, you know, I think the bookends of that game are very telling. I believe that we got ourselves into a good position, Ted, after, you know, going down, maybe being a little bit maybe overthinking some things, and from a defensive standpoint, and certainly an offensive, from an offensive output standpoint, not as clean of a first quarter. But we get to a good place with a good fight towards the end of the game, and in the end, we felt like they made plays in that fourth quarter, and we didn't. You know, I think if we go back and watch that entire game from start to finish, we felt like, from a on-ball, off-ball, all things considered, stopping transition defensive game, it was one of our better. Just felt like we're really starting to button up on details, and we had a big off-ball focus this week, and they scored a few, but and they also scored a couple terrific earned goals. So, but we felt like defensively we had a fairly balanced game, and we were pressing a bit at the end there, and give up a few easy ones, unfortunately, but. And we just felt like on the offensive end of the field, we were choppy. And, we scored some goals. We scored some goals early. We felt like early in a possession, felt like Anthony had a great game and a couple other guys. But, you know, some of our other best players or who we deem our best offensive players just weren't producing and haven't a ton up until this point. So we've been challenging hard this week in order to do so. But in the end, felt like an imbalanced game, just in terms of, again, that complementary lacrosse, and finding those three play momentums where we're giving ourselves that that catalyst into the next quarter, the next half, or this and that. So lots of good things to take away from that game, but ultimately at this point we just feel like we've got to play better on both sides of the field and in between the lines in order to get a win like that.
One of those good things, a career-high 18 saves from Ellis Wilson. He's now stopped 52% in his last four games. The average, I know me and my numbers, but the average in the A-10 is 48%. So aside from the numbers, what are you seeing from him in terms of his progression as a goalkeeper?
Just work, really, a different element of work. And, Ellis is a great microcosm of what we've been explaining to this team, that, he's found a different Monday to Friday. Just, him and Coach Fish work together. Coach Fish handles our goalies and does a great job with them. But just work together on a different warm-up. And, what are the things that can get you seeing more rubber in a healthy way and getting more stops leading up to the game? So put together a different plan, both in practice, our pre-practice warm-up, our in-practice work, and then our pre-game warm-up has changed. And, I think that's a great way for a great catalyst for the rest of our men to recognize how to do this thing. I mean, Ellis was playing okay, not great, as we talked about, but now has gotten into a groove where, he's very confident and we're very confident, but he had to change up what he was doing. Couldn't keep, hard work in one direction without outcome is just basically stupidity. I mean, you got to find a different path to get a better product. And especially if you don't like the product you're putting out there. So we actually used him as an example going into this week, and we talked about, okay, our edge work is on point. Our guys are doing it. We know that, and we're appreciative of it, but it's time to figure out a different way. And so if you're not hitting the cage in a game, you've got to find a different way to get these shots off throughout the course of the week. And so Ellis, back to that point, he's changed up that whole routine. He's changed up his film work, the days that he does it and the different film that he's watching. So we're very proud of the strides he's making. And then, got to give a shout out there to Jack Viola, where, it's a 40-degree day and it's windy. And, I think everyone's kind of wondering, what are the coaches doing with the goalies during the season, da-da-da. And again, we've always said we've got two great ones. But then, unfortunately, Ellis gets a penalty at the end of the quarter, and it's an even scenario where we have to clear the ball. So Jack goes in the game freezing cold and basically fires a dart over the midline to Chad Bach, and we clear it effectively. So, you know, the reason why he played early in this season and why we do the things that we do is for scenarios like that. So I'm proud of Jack for going in and proud of the way he's handling this whole situation, and the strides that Ellis is making are ones that we need for sure.
I'm trying real hard not to be a whiner about refs this year, and I've mostly succeeded. But what exactly was that penalty on Ellis after he had his helmet knocked off?
Retaliation.
Okay.
So, you know, Ellis was ticked and I mean, barely. Ted, I mean, I'm on your side here.
Yeah,
barely.
I didn't see a lot there.
You know, it's just, you know, it's something that the refs feel like they need to call. And that's the problem that we face with the officials is, you know, they're by the book some weeks and then they're not. And then the consistency in the gray area, you know, we've got, certain games where our opponent drops an F-bomb and they get a penalty, and then, you know, on the game Saturday that didn't happen. So it's like, what, how are we coaching our guys, you know? In that sense, Ellis has got to be less impulsive and you know, just control his reaction. It's a hard thing to do, especially in a dogfight like that, but you know, ultimately, we give up a 2-minute non-releasable penalty for an even scenario because of it. So we've talked a lot about how we got to be smarter there.
One other thing about officiating, and this has been consistently called, but it seems to me like whether there's been an instruction given or whatever, that pretty much everything is okay on a face-off. There's just very few holds or pushes or anything being called in face-offs anymore. Has anybody said to you, this is how it's going to be, or have you noticed that?
No, I mean, well, sorry, yes, you know, but again, I think the challenge is, especially for Shea and Mike, as we watch film, and, you know, it's funny, Shea's so veteran at this thing now, he wants to know who the officials are before the game, so that he can start to kind of predict on, you know, what the whistles will look like, and also what they'll call and what they won't, you know, but so, unfortunately, even in those scenarios, if you have the same officials, the way that they call the game, the way that our game runs, it's just different week to week. And, you know, I think because we're doing our best here, Ted, to save the face-off, you know, in some capacity, I think a lot of coaches are really fed up with it and think it's way too impactful in our game. You know, the guy you're talking to right now is one of them. It's but I do think you've got great players in Adam Shea and great players in Mike Valente. So and those guys are across the country. But this thing has to be less specialized and less scrutinized if it's going to continue. And so maybe or the hope is that they're letting people play out there because, you know, the past couple of years it's been like, he's early, he's holding, he's this, that. It's a soap opera. There's no groove to it. There's no flow. And then, you know, in that sense, the face-off isn't impactful. The officiating is impactful. So
right.
The hope is, Ted, that they're allowing more, but also making sure that people still aren't cheating, which is, you know, why all these rule changes started way back in the day where, you know, I remember being at Princeton and you know, we were playing, I mean, I want to say Harvard, and the guy that they had was incredible, but you could slow down the film and you could see him grabbing the ball with his hand.
Yeah.
And exiting the ball with his hand, but he was so good at it that the refs couldn't see it and this and that. So that's where this all started, is people were cheating and they were cheating really well. And it was impactful. So the hope is they can find that balance where kids can play. We accentuate that unique skill that's in our sport, which is a lot of people talk about. This is unlike any other scenario where, you know, you have the opportunity to win the ball back every time you score, which is unique. And I think people want to keep that. But we also got to find a way to make sure they don't cheat and also find a way to allow them to continue to play.
Let's go back to the offensive side of the ball for a moment. I thought outside of Ellis's performance and goal, one of the most encouraging things I've seen was the passing. I mean, you talk about getting the ball in cage. When someone puts it in your stick right in front of the net and you can dunk it home, it's going in. I thought for a while Ryan Archer had come back.
Yeah. I think what you saw in the good, we also, we're so, Let me put it this way. The standard that we hold our men to, Ted, is very high. You know that. And we see, and we have that standard in place from an execution standpoint because we see what they're capable of. And for some reason, which is unbeknownst to us or any coaching staff, sometimes you get products on the field on a game day that you don't recognize. And you're like, okay, well, why not just do it the way we did it Monday to Friday? And but you're also getting terrific effort. You know, I think what you see in, you know, some of Troy's plays and, you know, when he's diving through the, you know, getting pushed and diving and, you know, the way that Anthony plays and the way that the ball moves, you know, if you watch James Green and his catalyst, like how fluid he is with the ball and his stick. When we're on point, Ted, the ball pops and we're seeing exactly what we want to see. We're seeing, you know, our best dodger, as Coach Brundage always says, is our ball movement. And so, but there's also times where possessions are empty and, you know, we got a guy with a pole on him and he's kind of, you know, trying to exchange the ball and, you know, we're a little bit unorganized. And so now time's winding off the clock and da, da, da. So, you know, that's the frustrating part about that Albany game is you watch half of our possessions and you go, yes, this is it. This is what can have us competing for an Atlantic 10 championship, no doubt. And then you watch others and go, if we play like this in our conference, we're going to get our bag beat in. That's just the way that it goes. So, but the patience that Coach Brundage has shown and the consistency in his message in terms of what's successful, what allows us to succeed and what doesn't, the good part is we've got good leadership. We've got good, well-balanced men that watch a film and go, yes, this isn't good enough, and work hard to fix it.
From the glass half-empty department, a couple of clock situations. There was one where you had a restart with 8 on the shot clock, and then another one where the shot clock was off, but the game clock was in the final seconds, and it looked like both times nobody on the field knew what the clock was, and it just ran out on you.
I think they, you know, we went back and watched, Ted, some clock plays with Robert Morris and talked about ways that we fix those. What are we call our end of clock scenario, the little clock, the shot clock. We call that our Shiloh scenario where, you know, here are your options. These are the things you can do with 10 seconds left on the clock. These are your options with 5 seconds left on the clock. This is your option with 2 seconds left on the clock. And so, we talk about that a lot. And then from a big clock scenario, when, you know, a quarter's ending and we want the ball to stay with us and you'll hear our sideline call all the time, you know, we're on the little clock or, you know, we're on the big clock. And so the guys have those scenarios. I just think, you know, when you get into the groove of what's working for you offensively and what's not working for you, unfortunately, in those low clocks, I think a lot of guys start to depend on, okay, well, this is working the past. Let's go to this instead of, Or here's what I'm supposed to do with 7 seconds left on a small clock. Or here's what happens when we have a minute left on the big clock. Here's how we play that. And so, you know, some of the emotional standpoint, again, the impulse versus response thing is something that we're spending a lot of time on here. So I think guys, when what you're seeing, Ted, guys know how much time's on the clock. They just don't execute great. You know, I think they get a little bit emotional in those situations. But we've worked on them these past 2 weeks, and hopeful that with Lemoyne on Saturday, when those situations happen, we're more effective.
I feel like some of the pieces of that offensive puzzle are starting to drop into place. One is Troy Barthelme scoring like last year's Troy. He had no goals coming into the game. He's got 3 now. He had a great game. And also, you were able to get John Herlihy back on the field at least a little bit. So talk about those two, and is Herlihy going to be closer to 100%?
Yeah, you know, So he played in that game with it's obviously the respect we have for Johnny. He played in that game without having practiced much since that Colgate scrim or that Colgate game. So that's a long time out.
Yeah.
And so but he's been dialed in, and you know, he's as focused as a captain on this team. He's been as focused as anybody. One, on his health and getting back, and then two, you know, making sure he's ready when he is back. So, and thankfully this week, John's been practicing full contact all week, and really believe that we're starting to see the product of John Herlihy. A lot of you know, and that's you know, from an outside perspective, Ted, that's a tough thing to do. Is to not only are you hurt, and then or you're on an IR list, and then you're cleared to play. you haven't played. So that, you know, that whole transition is not seamless. It's challenging, man. And, you know, what happens over the course of a three-week period when you're playing different games and you see different areas of growth and areas of focus, and you're not really in that moment in practice to work on those improvements. And so, you know, you're not just picking up where you left off. You've got to figure out where the team is now and then get back in that groove after that time away. So that unfortunately takes time. I think when guys get cleared, they come back and they're underwhelmed. And then, you know, what you got to deal with is that backlash and say, hey man, this is how it goes. You gotta have a few practices under your belt here. You got to push yourself. You got to get that edge work in. You got to do all those things so that you're back in your playing form. So that's where Johnny's been this week, you know. And Troy, unfortunately, I think he may be out again this upcoming weekend. We're not sure yet, but he's still fighting some bumps and bruises, and he's got that fifth year old man body that, and he's also, you know, carrying around you know, a 6'9" frame and a 7-foot frame, and it's a lot of wear and tear. And if you see Troy play, I mean, he ain't blowing by people. Everything he's got to do is a physical brand of lacrosse. I mean, so he takes a beating all game long and all week long. And so we're trying to figure out a good health system for that. And then, you know, and then each week, Ted, it's like, you know, John Jude's out, so we got to fill that gap. And then Johnny's out, you got to fill that gap. Troy was out, you fill that one. And then Chris was out last week, Patterson. So a lot of those moving parts that haven't made Coach Brundage's job easy. I mean, it's, you know, kind of, we feel like we're filling a new gap each week, but at the same time, growing great depth. And got to believe that, to your point, when Troy is healthy and then Johnny is healthy, and they will be all the way, and Chris Patterson is all the way healthy, and now, you know, even without some John Judes of the world, now you've talked about the great time Mike Cardinale's gotten, the Colton Swishers of the world, Rosie, that development of playing down low and up top, and Max Snellenberg getting some good minutes for us. So there's a lot of positives to all the ins and outs that we've had offensively, and do believe that as this time goes on and we get into that health groove, that we'll be in a pretty good spot come 8-10 time.
So the man-up unit's been struggling at times this year, and if Barthelme's out, who takes that spot up top? He likes to play up top a lot and distribute the ball in the man-up.
Right. You know, I think that the easiest one is James. You know, James has the vision and the stick work like Troy. Not ultimately like Troy, but has still done a pretty good job there. And then when you get Johnny back, you can kind of put that hammer of a shot out on man up as well. So, again, giving us some different looks and some different things to think about as a coaching staff. But, you know, without Troy, you probably see Johnny out there. You see James out there. And you know, you just got a little bit of a different feel.
So you have Lemoyne for the first time ever this week, brand new Division I program, a huge, it's kind of like Hobart. They were the Hobart of Division II for a number of years, winning all those national championships. The first thing when I see them, they don't give up many goals. They take very few penalties. Do they play kind of a deliberate pace to keep the score down, or is that just how it's turning out?
No, they do, you know, and, you know, obviously Coach Sheehan's a very, very veteran coach. He sees, you know, what it takes to win at this level and has always, really. And I think, you know, the D2 teams that make that jump do so with a giant chip on their shoulder and, you know, just want to prove that, you know, the whatever discrepancy there'd be between Division II and Division I, the best in Division II can always compete with the best in Division I. You know, it's one of those things that they just carry with them. Fortunately, in these circumstances, we've had experience. You know, we played in conference a Division II national championship for 2 years in a row, and then they come to Division I, and the similarities are uncanny, really. I mean, just in terms of how chippy they play and how physical they are, and how confident they are and prideful. They have good goaltending. They face off well. I mean, Merrimack and Lemoyne, I can see, you know, Merrimack jumps to Division I and they beat Michigan in their, you know, first or second week or something like that, you know. So we're in no position or don't have any agenda in terms of they're a Division II team or this and that. We just don't think that way. We've seen them have success. We have full respect for it, and also have experienced the battles with a team like Merrimack that puts a very prideful group on the field. So, we think that they're deliberate because it's worked for them in the past, not because they're playing a different style because they play Division I lacrosse. They don't make a lot of mistakes. That's the way they play the game. And they have, offensively, they have great off-ball threats, and they move very consistently and persistently off ball. So they grind you down a little bit, try to lull you to sleep, and then, you know, the guy with the ball just blows by his guy and has a nice opportunity, or they flash off ball and they give the ball to him. And defensively, they slide again, they slide a third time, they slide after that, and just continue to work the ball and move it. So, and the guy at the faceoff dot, like I said, and the guy in the goal are pretty good. So, you know, everything in front of us looks exactly like the experience we had with Merrimack a couple of years ago. And now we've just got a different opponent, and have to give them our full focus.
So here comes me and my crazy numbers again. But when I looked at their clear number defensively, they've only prevented, I think, 4 times out of 113 or something. What have you seen on video about how they ride that's been so ineffective?
They don't. They sub. And so, and we're veteran enough in this thing to maybe think there might be something up their sleeve and add a more pressure element to their ride. But I think they're more interested, Ted, on not giving up any transition and playing half field game and getting the right personnel on the field so they can play solid half field defense. At least that's what we see. And so, you know, that may change in this game and they may pressure a little bit, but their attack drops to the midline, they sub like crazy, and they get as many of their defensive personnel on every time they can.
So when you face a team like that, do you try to dictate tempo? Do you say, let's be, I don't want to say helter-skelter, because you've always said it's not, the idea of a high-paced offense isn't to be out of control, but to be high-paced with control. But do you try to dictate tempo and make this an up-and-down game where you're getting down the field?
Well, maybe a little bit, but, you know, and also, Ted, we've just got to capitalize on what we're good at. You know, I think we're continuing to fight hard to find that balance that I keep telling you, which is really tough. You know, if you tell a team, hey, go play fast, then, you know, those empty possessions seem to be, much more frequent, you know, at least with us. And so, you know, what we want to do is have that catalyst and belief that we can score half field goals, and we can also score some early offensive goals, you know, and then make sure that the balls in the people's stick that can make those good decisions. Anthony Rosie and Chris Patterson, these guys that are going to have to say, yes, this is a great opportunity, or, you know, we're going to need a 66 style offense right now in this possession and make sure the clock's ours. So we'll do a little bit of both. You know, we feel like we match up pretty well against these guys. We also have, you know, some knowledge of one of their best players, you know, and Jack Grooms, and feel like he's going to play his butt off here when he comes back to Boswell Field. But, you know, so we've got a pretty decent plan in terms of what we want to do end to end, and, you know, how we need to prevent some stuff that they're capable of, but also how we need to start to kind of figure out a way to tear into this thing and play a high-paced game.
All right, fan reminder, with the time change, it's now a noon start. So it's 12 noon this Saturday at Boswell Field for the first ever meeting between Hobart and Lemoyne. Coach, thanks as always for the update.
All right, Ted.
This has been the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast with head coach Greg Raymond of the Statesman. Don't forget, you can find this podcast wherever you get podcasts, athletic or otherwise, be that Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever, and get all your athletics information at the official website of HWS Athletics. That, of course, is hwsathletics.com. So once more, noon at the Boz this week. And until next time, have a great lacrosse week.